Are you ready to finally finish that book draft or revision? Are you itching to learn new tools or frameworks to make the writing process easier? Are you looking for a side gig to add to your repertoire? Author Accelerator's Book Coach Certification Program is a robust and exciting way to learn new writing and publishing skills. Their certification course in fiction or nonfiction includes hundreds of hours of video lessons, workshops, and practice exercises, all about researching the marketplace, querying agents, project management for your book idea, and more. They're great, and I say that as someone who's done this. Many writers come to the program looking to up their writing game. Writer and certified book coach Trevor Brooks says, "This course changed my life. I feel more confident than ever in my ability to develop a manuscript as both a writer and a coach that will attract the attention of an agent and a publisher." So, if you're ready to try something new and join a community of writers and book coaches helping writers, visit authoraccelerator.com/writing to learn more.
Is it recording?
Now it's recording.
Yay.
Go ahead.
This is the part where I stare blankly at the microphone and try to remember what I'm supposed to be doing.
All right, let's start over.
Awkward pause.
I'm going to rustle some papers.
Okay.
Now 1, 2, 3.
Galantonia, and this is Hashtag Am Writing, the weekly podcast about writing all the things, short things, long things, pitches, proposals, fiction, nonfiction. We're the podcast about sitting down and getting your work done. I am KJ Galantonia. I'll be your solo interviewer this week, so I can just introduce myself right away. I'm the author of I'm about to tell you I'm the author of The Gift of Failure, like Jess, because like that's what rolls through my head. Okay, no, I am totally not that person. The author of The Gift of Failure is, as we speak, in Abu Dhabi, talking to people there about the gift of failure in like massive heat and sending us fascinating pictures of the entire process and royal families and all kinds of stuff. So she's there while I'm here, and I am the author of the novel The Chicken Sisters, the novel In Her Boots, the forthcoming, but not for a long time, novel Playing the Witch Card, and the nonfiction book How to Be a Happier Parent. I'm also a former editor and contributor to the New York Times. And I have a guest today. She doesn't get to talk yet, so she's just sitting here staring at me silently. But so my guest, I am so excited to welcome Patrice Gopo. Oh, I have to let her talk now because I forgot to ask you, Patrice.
Yeah, that's correct. Patrice Gopo.
Excellent. Patrice Gopo is an award-winning essayist and the author of books for adults and children. Her essay collection, All the Colors We Will See, was Barnes & Noble Discover Great New Writers Selection. Her debut picture book, All the Places We Call Home, was inspired by one of the essays in that collection. She is the child of Jamaican immigrants, but she was born and raised in Anchorage, Alaska, which gives her a pretty unique perspective on everything from racial identity formation and immigration to weather and the lives that we live in the great outdoors, which sort of fascinates me, because there, especially for your family, there's some, contrast.
Just a little,
okay,
just a little.
You still don't get to talk. Just a little. So, people, she has had essays in a ton of publications, including Catapult, Charlotte Magazine, Creative Nonfiction, and I don't know if it's Afar Magazine or
Afar. Yeah, it's Afar.
Afar. And her essay, That Autumn, received a notable mention in Best American Essays 2020, which is huge. She is also the recipient of a North Carolina Arts Council Artist Fellowship and a Sustainable Arts Foundation Award. And I'm giving you all those last details because literary magazines, grants, and residencies are exactly what we're planning to talk about. So my point is, she knows from which she speaks. And now I get to say welcome. Hi.
Thank you so much. It's super fun to be here. I am really delighted. And thanks for the introduction.
You're welcome. It was a combination of me reading your bio and also telling people what I think they want to know about it. It's always kind of funny because I'm frequently a podcast guest and you listen to people read your bio and you're like, well, if I had known you were going to just read it straight up, I don't know that I would have written it that way. But so I picked and chose.
You did. And I like the details that you picked and chose. So thank you.
I would love to start with how you get started. And the thing I really want to know is how you pulled together the personal wherewithal, the guts, to send your first essay to the first place that you submitted it.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So, you know, KJ, I came to writing, I don't know what the best expression would be, but it really wasn't something I was thinking about doing. So I studied chemical engineering in undergrad. I went to graduate school. I got an MBA and a master's of public policy. I was going to work with the community development projects and different programs like that. And at some point, I actually found my way into writing. I realized, oh, this is something that I want to do. I didn't know anything about it. I didn't know anything about how do you get your workplaces, how do you begin, any of that kind of thing. And so along the way, as I started learning about it, and that's something I really encourage people a lot, when you're getting into writing, start writing, but also start learning about what is happening in the writing world. And I think those two things can go side by side, that, you know, you don't need to figure out everything before you start writing and, you know, don't do all the writing and not be figuring out things as well. So I started learning about literary journals, and honestly, KJ, I thought, I don't even know what these things are. And I hadn't really, you know, seen them a lot. I didn't know a whole lot about them. But as I was engaging with learning about the craft of writing, they kept coming up and they kept coming up. And I started reading them, and I thought, you know, I think this is a place that I would want to submit my work. And so what I had figured out is the way that you do this is you go to the publication, to their website, and you look for their submission guidelines, because it'll often be, you know, a tab that you click on their submission guidelines, and you, and so that's how you figure out how to do it. And I remember finishing this piece and thinking, okay, I think I'm going to try this. I'm going to do this, you know, send something off. And I did, and I sent it off, and it was kind of scary, but I think I also felt really good about doing that. And then,
so wait, stop.
Okay.
Tell us, what were some of the first ones that you read, and what format did you read them in?
So I would say, let me try and fall back in time to think, like, what were some of the, you know, which publication I started reading first? Do you know Literary Mama?
Yeah.
So that was like one of my first publications that I read. And that is an online publication. And so you're able to easily access that online. Uh-huh. And, you know, you can see what's going on and stuff. But I also started reading, there's a print publication called Image Journal. And I think their tagline is Faith and Mystery. So I subscribed, or maybe I didn't even subscribe. I probably ordered a couple copies to see what it was about. And that was how I would have read that one in print. And then there were some others that were online. I remember being somewhere, I think a library, and they were giving away copies of an old literary journal. And I remember picking it up, and I don't even remember which journal it was at this time, but yeah, I grabbed that one. There was a literary journal called Memoir that is no longer, I don't think it exists anymore, but I somehow stumbled across that, and I remember ordering a copy of that one as well. So that was kind of where I started. Just these, whatever would come across my way, maybe I'd read somebody's essay somewhere and their bio would say they've been published in these places. So then I'd go, and if I liked the piece, I would go and try and find a little bit more out about those journals. So it wasn't a really consistent, thought out plan, I guess is the way I would best say this. But I do remember finding this publication. So I found Literary Mama, and I found another publication called Relief. And Relief Journal, they, a lot of their content explored issues of faith. And then Literary Mama was obviously working with parenthood, motherhood. And those were two topics that I wrote about at the time. And I just thought, I think this would be a good place to start. And so I submitted to both of those places. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of the beginning of how I started submitting my work.
What was the first thing that got accepted, and what was that like?
So the first thing that got accepted, I think actually I sent something to Literary Mama. And, you know, interestingly enough, it didn't get accepted. It was more a revise and resubmit. The editor wrote me back and said they really liked what I was trying to do here, but they wanted to work with me to make it something even stronger that could be in Literary Mama. And so it actually started this process of this revision process that went on. I mean, we probably spent several months back and forth on that before they accepted it for publication in total. So yeah, I think that was my first one. Or maybe it was something in Relief Journal. That might have been my first one too. You know, KJ, I'm sorry. This is going back 10 years. So I'm trying to just recall all the details from this.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's great to hear not just sort of where you got started in terms of, well, this specific journal or this specific author, but the way that you found the places that you wanted to start. I think that's really, because that's something anybody can do right now. It doesn't matter if Literary Mama or Relief Journal are still publishing or if they've changed the way that they do things. What matters is you find an essay and you look in that person's bio, or you go look that person up and you go back in their time travel machine and you figure out where they started.
It's absolutely true. And actually, it's interesting you should say that, because there is a writer that I know who probably started writing maybe 5 or 6 years after I started writing. So, or maybe even later, I'm not sure. But I don't even hardly know this person, but our worlds have intersected a little bit. Mm-hmm. But the point is, as I have kind of observed where this person is publishing, I've noticed that they are almost publishing in places similar to where I initially started publishing, which isn't to say, I'm not even trying to say that they are, you know, they look to my bio or anything like that.
No, but it's just the way it works.
Yeah, I do think there is something about looking to the people's work that you respect and seeing where they publish to get ideas about where you might want to reach out to, where might be a good fit for your work. Because I think that's one of the realities when you're thinking about publishing with literary journals, is not every literary journal is going to be a good fit for your work. And KJ, there are so many of them out there. I mean, if you go to Poets and Writers and search their database, you can see just this huge extensive list, which that's a great resource for someone who's trying to look for possible journals. But there are so many out there, and you're kind of think, well, where do I even start to try and think through which journal should I look into as a possible home for my work? And I think a great place is to look to the writers that you respect, that you like what they're doing, and just see where they've published. And you can start there to try and see, well, maybe this publication might be a good fit for me too.
Yeah, no, I think that makes perfect sense. And it's just also, you know, which publications are welcoming to new voices and which ones you don't want to be submitting as a new writer to a publication that, when you look, the only things they have in there are people whose names you recognize.
Yeah.
That's probably just, you're probably not going to start there. And it doesn't mean that what you're submitting isn't just as good as what they're sitting. It's just that publication is maybe not, you know, maybe they're just not interested in.
Yeah.
They probably have an interest in focusing on only, you know, Roxane Gay, who's fantastic. But
I do think there's something about figuring out how to, what would be the right word, kind of discern what's happening within a publication.
Yeah.
To determine, is this a place that I would like to submit my work? Would this possibly be a good fit? And I think what can be really helpful is to look, if we are writers and we connect with a writing community and, you know, we're part of a critique group or we take classes, see the people who you are coming across and look to, where are they looking? And I think those can be really great places to start, which isn't to say I don't think we should, you know, reach for other places too. I think, you know, we should definitely do that too. But I think it's a good, there is something that can be helpful to kind of get a sense of where you might fit into this literary world, and just, you know, think about where are these places that might be a good fit. And I mean, that makes me think, also, if people are looking for places, there is a website, Clifford Garstang. I'm going to put the link. I'm going to give you the link so you can see it. But he does this annual kind of ranking of literary magazines. So he does a ranking for nonfiction, for fiction, for poetry. And I think if you're trying to also find some literary journals, I know one of the other things that can happen is people want to place their work, but I think also over time, you are wanting to also place your work in maybe literary journals that might get more eyes on them or might, you know, open up other possibilities for you too. And so I think sometimes it can be helpful to even see which literary journals might be, you know, I don't know, the literary world is viewing as a particular place where you're going to find especially strong work or something like that.
Yeah, there's just, you have to be able to look around. There's also, you're saying that reminded me that there's a Substack dedicated to literary magazines. It's called Lit Mag News! ! It's from Becky, I think her last name is pronounced Tuck, T-U-C-K-T-U-C-H.
Oh, yeah, I subscribe to this.
There you go. And I will put that in the show notes. I think we as a publication recommend it. I'm just getting more and more and more into Substack and being a part of it. With every passing day, there's really becoming so much great stuff here. So anyway, Lit Mag News! ! I love that. The exclamation point is clearly clear, or very important. So, yeah, that's been another place for me to discover places that I hadn't thought about yet. I think I recently, it was through that I found, I don't even remember, but I'll look it up.
There's
some
absolutely
cute new online thing that I really liked, and one of the things they publish is something called Letter to a Stranger.
Okay.
And they had published somebody's recent letter to my Parisian gynecologist.
Oh, right.
Which was really interesting. And they have like a sort of a travel slash.
Yeah.
Anyway, their stuff was this great mashup of literary and travel and sort of musing. I don't know, in a way that really spoke to me. So I was like, oh, that's interesting. Whereas sometimes somebody else, you know, I'll look at a literary magazine and just be like, just none of this is interesting me.
Well, so I think that's important, right?
You got to find the right thing.
Yes, I think that's really important. I think when people are thinking about literary magazines is they all have their own personalities. And we as writers all have our own personalities. And so I think what can be really special is when the literary magazine personality and the writing person personality fit together.
Yeah.
And then you're like, yeah, this is a great place for me that, you know, I maybe want to continue doing things with them, that I might want to continue to connect with this community that this literary magazine is fostering. So I think there's more to it than just finding a place to submit your work. Because I think the reality as well is that, not that this happens all the time across the board, but I do think writing community relationships can form through publishing within literary journals, that you become part of their community as well. And that you just never know what that's going to mean in the future. So I think that's why it matters that you want to find like a good fit, like personality fit. So I think your example was great. Just that, you really like that. And others, you're like, I don't like that.
You know, and the word, the word literary magazine can even itself feel very exclusive to some of us.
I think it does to me. I think that's super true.
I am not a literary, I'm not a writer of quote unquote literary fiction, which really, sometimes I feel like we should just have named the different genres Fred and Barney and Wilma and Betty, because it's not, better, worse, who knows?
Yeah,
but when I hear literary journal, I kind of go, oh, that's for people with fancy degrees and a different outlook on life. But there are really literary journal means a publication made to gather a bunch of writers with a shared sensibility.
Yeah, I think so. I definitely think so. So I think that's, that's a real encouragement for people to, just look around, look for the people that are doing things that you like that they're doing and see where they're finding their personality fits and things. And, I think too, I shared that list that ranked the journals. I think that can be really helpful depending on what your goals might be for why you're publishing. But I just want to be clear, as with anything, I think as writers, it matters that we think about what are our actual goals versus what are the goals we think are floating out there that we're supposed to have. And I think if we recognize what our actual goals are, maybe we're not necessarily trying to publish in whatever this top tier journal, or maybe we are. And so I think if we can name that, it will help us in our own decision-making process. It will help us to think about what's my strategy for simultaneously submitting. I really encourage people to simultaneously submit to journals because, I mean, they can take 6 months, 9 months to get back to you. And if you just submit to one at a time, then you start that whole process all over again. But I do
think and you lose the freshness of what you've created.
Yeah.
So yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. You got it. And the way to do that, people, is just to own it. You know, whatever you've written, to sort of barely introduce the essay. They're really just interested in the essay, usually. There might be elements of your connection to the essay that are super important. So you're like, you know, dear literary magazine, I want to submit my essay called the beach umbrella that fell on my foot last summer. I'm the person to write this because I was in this huge, you know, tropical storm last summer that was don't write about beach umbrellas and your foot. That's what happened when I looked out the window at my yard and the things that I need to deal with out there. Anyway, and you know, I've been published in so-and-so and so-and-so. Here's the essay. Please note that this is a simultaneous submission.
Exactly.
Yes. It's expected. It's normal.
I think I have been to multiple conferences where editors got up and they say, at this point, we expect that people are doing it. So it's not
problematic to lay it out there. Yeah.
So I think that's helpful. And so I think with regards to knowing your goals, it matters in terms of simultaneous submissions, because I think then you're able to group together which publications would you most want to see your piece published in, to group those in one grouping and simultaneously submit to them together. And then as you think about, okay, if I receive rejections from this round, then there's another group that maybe it's not my most desired place that I would want my public, but I would still be super happy here and, you know, submit to that group together so that you're not, so I guess my point is that it's really helpful to kind of in your mind, depending on what your goal is, to separate those publications into different groupings and submit to each group together.
Not necessarily sense.
Mixing right, them all
so
up.
So that you're not like, I mean, you know, maybe you get to the point where there's a magazine that's going to take almost everything that you come up with,
mm-hmm,
but
mm-hmm.
there's something else that to you is going to open some other doors.
Right.
So maybe you give them that and you don't give it to the second magazine. And I also wanted to throw out there that, you know, if you have an essay and it's 1,000 words, but some of these places are 800 words. So you're sort of, you know, it's fine to tailor it. Sometimes you have an essay that is its own little inherent chunk and it just is what it is and it doesn't change. But sometimes you might change the way you introduce it if it's going to creative nonfiction versus if it's going to, relief.
Because
they might just sort of be prone to a different kind of way of easing.
Yeah.
They might have a different voice for easing people into their material.
Right. Right. Yeah, I think that's very true. Yeah, so I think it's true. When we think about simultaneous submissions, it's not even necessarily that you're sending out the exact identical submission package to every, place you're submitting. But yes.
Yes, don't do that.
Right, don't do that.
Don't just copy and paste.
Right, yes, exactly. Like you want to direct it to the place that you're directing it to. But at the same time, you don't have to do it one at a time.
No. Oh, and always put the email address in last. That's just a little random tidbit. Never put the email address in the subject line until you've finished the entire email.
Oh, yes,
email.
That's a good tip. I think that's a good tip.
Because, I hit send. And then as I watched it go away, I realized it said, Dear Patrice, who was the editor.
Right.
And even though I changed every other stupid thing,
I
didn't change your name to Ralph. And now I have to kill myself.
So, right. So I think that's a good tip. My other tip, similarly, when you're submitting, I mean, I guess it doesn't always hold, because a lot of times you're using Submittable and things like that to submit to literary journals. But if you're emailing, just BCC yourself on the email so you don't get stressed out thinking, did it go? Did it send? Or anything like that. So
I had two directions I want to go here. And one is how you went from beginning to having from beginning to have these essays out there into deciding to pitch and form a collection. Oh, so I guess let's go that way, but then we got to make sure to reserve some time to talk about grants and residencies.
Yes. Okay. Well, I'll just tell you the really quick story. I was writing essays, and I think one thing that happens as we write essays is that over time, we often will return to similar themes. I mean, not everyone does this all the time, but a lot of writers will start returning to some of the same themes over and over. And I took a class actually with creative nonfiction, and my teacher, Lisa Olin Harris, was the teacher in that class. And she was reading some of my work, and she said to me, you know, Patrice, you kind of keep circling around some of these same ideas around racial identity formation, immigration experiences, and these themes continue to show up in your work. And you do this enough, that is what builds a collection. And yeah, and so KJ, that was really my first thought, that these essays, at the time, my only goal was find a publication home for the essay. And I really wasn't thinking beyond that. What do you do when you amass 15 or 20 of these things? And so her words, that really got me thinking, yeah, I could be working towards a larger project. I could be working towards, you know, this essay collection. And it felt really neat for me to have a goal of some sort, that there seemed to be, I guess I would say, a larger purpose almost for these things I was writing, these ideas that were coming, these stories that I felt the sense of urgency to tell. And so that's when I started thinking, okay, I'm going to slowly work on putting this collection together. Well, as life would have it, I ended up publishing an article that a literary agent happened to read, and then went to my website and read some of my other work and reached out to me and said, this essay collection sounds like a great idea. Have you thought about putting together a proposal for it? That maybe this was something we could go on submission with. And yeah, I mean, that was really what pushed me to end up putting together the proposal that ended up becoming All the Colors We Will See. And at the time, I had probably written about 2/3 of the essays that are in the book. So I had written quite a few of them already. But that was really kind of the next step that pushed me in that direction. And I mean, I share that story because I recognize it's not always the case that a literary agent is going to find you as you know, you're doing work. But here's what I like to tell people about that story. When that literary agent found me, I was ready to go forth with that thing. So it was that idea of, you know, the timing was right, that I had been in many ways preparing for this and not even fully realizing that I had been preparing for this. So that's what I really like to encourage people to think about, is as you are working on your work, writing essays, whatever it might be thinking about what that larger story might be for your work and where it might end up, because who knows who you're going to run into. And to be able to say, yeah, this is what I'm working on, this is the thing that I'm doing, I think can be really neat. So just encouraging people to have some time in their mind to think through what that might be for their own work.
And not to, I think sometimes we hear these stories where an agent reaches out to someone or someone meets somebody in an elevator and we just think, well, that'll never happen to me. That's totally unlikely. There's no reason for me to even dream about that. But, it's what we say on the podcast all the time. You don't get lucky unless you wrote the book. You don't get chosen for the book club unless you've written a book. You can't say yes to the agent unless you have some essays put together and something in your mind.
Yeah.
Your essay doesn't go viral if you'd ever submitted an essay.
Right. Yeah. I think that's
fortune
true.
Favors you know, the well-prepared, the bold, the ones, you got to play that game to win.
Yeah, I think there is this sense of how do you balance that tension of just doing the work and taking the steps that you hear that, you know, this is what we do. And also giving yourself space for things can happen and you don't know what that could be. So I think that can be part of the beauty of just continuing to show up for the work.
Yeah. Well, I feel like we could go on talking about the essay specifically, but I do. I think so when it comes to literary grants and residencies, I think this is another area, kind of like the literary magazine, where we rule ourselves out by never applying, right?
Yes.
So can you talk a little about how you decided to get started applying for these things and then how you did it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I just want to say, I think you're absolutely right that I think too often we kind of hear about these things out there, you know, somewhat. But
those are for real writers.
And I think, you know, the reality is there are opportunities that exist out there. I know they're not always easy to find, but I think there is a variety of extremely competitive opportunities and ones that there just aren't as many people applying as you think. And so mm-hmm. I think there's kind of that sense of figuring that out. But my first experience applying for a grant was through my local Arts and Science Council, which is the North Carolina Arts Council. Each county in North Carolina has their own version. And ours here in the Charlotte-Mecklenburg County is the Arts and Science Council. And I subscribe to a newsletter called Funds for Writers, I think is the name of the newsletter. And I'll send you all the information later. I can circle back to that. But I remember going through the newsletter and it just lists these different opportunities. And one of the opportunities said the Arts and Science Council of Charlotte-Mecklenburg County and their regional artist support grants. And I stopped because this is a national newsletter. And I thought, hey, wait a second. I live in Charlotte. I mean, this is me. And and they were having an informational session that was coming up maybe, I think, in a couple weeks. And I just thought, what is this? I mean, I'm going to go see what this is about. And I went to this informational session. And what it was is that they provided funding. I think at the time it was funding in the amount of up to $2,000 to support an artist in our local community who wanted to participate in a particular project. So maybe if you were, I don't know, a visual artist and you wanted to purchase some sort of equipment, or maybe you wanted to attend a conference or anything like that, but something specific. And I thought, I would like to attend a writing workshop in residency. I wanted to attend one of these things that I'd had my eye on, but I just hadn't done yet. I'm not even sure the reason I had. I mean, I think the cost was definitely part of it, but I think the other thing was making time for this thing that I was still a little nervous to reflect on the fact that I am a writer. And so I think, how do you make that? So there were various reasons. But when I went to this grant informational session, I was sitting there listening. I kept thinking, this is me. I'm the type of person they want to fund. And they explained step by step how to do the application, what to do. And so I applied and they gave me the grant. And I mean, there were multiple people. I wasn't the only one who received the grant, but they gave me the grant. And I thought, yeah, this is great. And I went and I did. I went to participate in this writing workshop. It was so helpful. I created some new work during that went on to, you know, just be known in the city, and just some very neat things happened from it. And so it became a win for me, but also a win for the Arts and Science Council, because they got to say, here we are funding, you know, this artist. And then when my essay collection came out a couple years later and was selected by Barnes & Noble as a Discover Great New Writers selection, they wanted to interview me and run a story about me. And so I felt as though, similarly, you become part of a community, that you are now part of this community, and I'm very much part of this Arts and Science Council community, that I feel like I support the work that they're doing, and they are so supportive of the work I'm doing. So that was my initial start with grants.
Right.
And I think I just thought, this is great. I'm going to keep looking for these things. I'm going to keep looking for the ways in which what I am trying to do aligns with what a grant might be trying to fund. And I think that's an important thing to think about when you're applying for grants, is that you want to find like an alignment between what it is you're trying to accomplish or do and who wants to see more of that happen in the world.
Right.
And look for those kinds of overlaps that might exist there. But I often tell people, you're not going to get every grant that you apply for, but once you start applying, it becomes that much easier to continue applying, because there's often several pieces that an application needs. You're going to need an artist statement. You're going to need probably your current resume, a description of the project, some work samples, and sometimes you'll need letters of recommendations. But some of the things like the artist statement and the current resume and some of these answers to questions they might ask, once you've written some of those, you start to get a rhythm for how to write those answers. And so in many ways, I think applying, the more often you apply, the more likely you are to get something. So if you're not applying, you're not going to get. But the more often you apply.
That's a guarantee.
Yeah, right? It's a guarantee. But then also the more often you apply, just the more comfortable you are with applying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you have any ideas for where people can look or how you find things to apply for?
Yeah, absolutely. I do have ideas. So I'm going to direct people, if you go to my website, patricescopo.com, and then you go to the very bottom to the writing resources tab, I keep a whole list of writing resources on that page. If you scroll all the way to the bottom, you'll get to my section about grants and residencies, where I list some different opportunities that I've come across or things that I've received over the years, just so people can see what might be out there. It is not comprehensive by any means.
It's a start.
It is a start. And then I also recommend some newsletters that you can subscribe to that also list opportunities. So I think one of the things is, once you start seeing where these opportunities are, you start to see where you can look for more opportunities. So I think it's one of these things, similarly to the discussion we were having about literary journals, that it's almost as though, put your toe in, dip it in the water, see what's out there, and it's going to lead you to more things as well. So also in that section on my website, I link to another part of my website where I list like 9 tips for applying for grants and residencies as well, which I guess we haven't really talked about residencies yet. But so I think the applications work very similarly. But for your listeners, I often think of residencies as time away somewhere to work on your writing, whereas grants are money and funding to help you with your writing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, residencies, I mean, I know people that have done, there's a humor residency, St. Nell's, I think it's called.
I'll
put that in the show notes. And of course, there's the famous ones.
There's some pretty famous ones.
McDowell, that's the one I often, I've eyed that and not applied for it 1,000 times, but there's a whole lot.
There are a lot of residencies. There are a lot. And so maybe I could just quickly break down the categories of grants that I like to think of and then the categories of residencies.
Great.
So just so people are kind of aware of what I think exists out there. So in terms of grants, I would say there's like 3 categories of grants. The first being applying for a grant for a specific like project that you're trying to work on. So for example, I have received a grant to fund an anthology project that I'm working to develop. And so in order to pay my contributors, I've received grant funding to do this thing. So I think that would be one thing that you might look for. And I would say that type of grant too, sometimes it can be very particular in terms of what does the focus need to be? What is this organization interested in doing, and trying to align that together? Another type of grant that I think exists out there is more a grant, and this is a bit similar to the first one I said, but a grant that is specifically to maybe fund you to go to like a conference or something, that you're using it to go to this conference, you're using it to attend a workshop or something like that that might exist. So I guess there's probably overlap between the first two. And then the last grant, though, that I think is also an interesting one to consider is where they fund you and it's open-ended. And they give you money to just support the fact that you are a writer. So the National Endowment for the Arts has a grant that they, every 2 years it's for prose, every other year then it's for poetry. And from what I understand, that's like an unspecified funding that you can use it however you need to support your writing life. I've received a couple of grants like that, one from the Sustainable Arts Foundation, and then the North Carolina Arts Council were similar in that vein. So it's just kind of helpful to know like these grants, you know, what types of grants exist out there. And then in terms of residencies, I like to think of residencies, there are residencies that you might apply to attend where they are asking you to pay a very reduced amount of money to be in this location for a period of time and you can work on what you're working on. But then there are other residencies who actually pay for everything. They fund everything. They may even provide a travel stipend to get to the location. Some of them through the Sustainable Arts Foundation funding will even provide like stipends for parent artists and things of that nature. So I guess I'm just trying to say some residencies you may end up paying to be there. Some of them cover everything. So mm-hmm. just be aware of what you're applying for when you do it.
Well, and then in residencies, there are the kind where you're going at a time when other people are going to be there and it's a community yes. residency. And then there's a different kind that's more of a, we have this, you know, we have this one cabin and you can yes. have it for 2 weeks or a month. But it's not, there's a lot. I think there are even more of those that are just more like you need a place to get away.
Right.
And be for a while and focus on the work.
Yes. Yes. I think that is actually, that's absolutely. So yeah. So maybe our categories, maybe it's not specifically this many categories, but these are some of the differences.
These are some of the things that are out there.
Out there. And so I
yeah.
think.
Yeah, you could go for a weekend and the mm-hmm. residency is really about the community, or you can go for a month and the residency is about the escape.
Right. Yeah. Yes, exactly. So I think whatever the case, it's just helpful to know there's a wide variety that exists out there and to think what might be useful for you. What might be the reason that you're actually trying to go on a residency to try and apply for one that fits what you're trying to do? Because who knows, maybe you don't want to be in a cabin by yourself in the middle of nowhere for a month. Maybe that actually sounds too isolating mm-hmm. to you. But maybe it's the perfect thing for somebody else. And maybe what you're looking for is actually, I want to be in a space where there are, I don't know, 12 other people here. We each have our own separate space in the day, but we have shared meals and maybe we group together and do activities on the weekend, you know, whatever. But they, all types exist out there.
That last one's my dream. I haven't found one. That's quite what I, but sometimes I, and sometimes I think, well, you know what the rule is, KJ, if you want something and you can't find it, you have to make it.
Oh, right. Well, someday, yeah, there's that.
Someday. Yes. Anytime. Yes. Well, this was fantastic. I really appreciate this. This has been so constructive. I hope that lots of y'all listeners out there can seize on some of this information and get yourself together. Look for a grant, look for a residency, or finally send something to a literary magazine that you haven't tried before. This is it's a great time. You know, you can't do it any sooner than today. So start thinking about it.
Absolutely. I hope so. I hope people do end up doing it. Because as we talked about already, I think the only way you're going to be able to take advantage of any of these things is to actually, you know, put your work, your application, whatever it may be out there into
yep.
the world.
Yeah, you have to ask to get.
Right, right.
All right, well, let's take just a quick pause and then we'll talk a little about what we've been reading. Okay, I love to ask our guests to go first, so lay it out there. What have you been reading?
Absolutely. Okay, so you mentioned in my bio that I write picture books as well. So I I am actually going to share some of the Kidlit I've been reading because that is really what I've been primarily focused on recently. So I'm going to share this book. It's called Nothing Special, and it's by Desiree Cooper, and it's illustrated by Beck Sloan. And it is a story of this little boy who goes to visit his grandparents, and he leaves thinking he's going to do all the things he used to do at home when he's visiting them. But then there's all these just fun things that his grandfather has, and he calls it kind of a nothing special day. And it is such a lovely story. But one of the things that's really fun is the illustrations are made out of recycled textiles. And so they're so cool. It's just such a fun book to look at.
I can see it because we're sharing a Zoom, and I just want everyone to know that it is gorgeously, fantastically illustrated. It would be a great get.
Yeah, it is. It would be. And it is, like I said, it is a really just lovely story. I think, I don't know, just you feel like you've been given this warm hug when you finish reading. So that's Nothing Special. The other book I read recently is When Stars Are Scattered. It is a graphic, well, I was about to say it's a graphic novel, except the story is true. So I would say it's a graphic memoir. Uh-huh. I think the age it targets is the middle grade audience. So When Stars Are Scattered by Victoria Jamieson and Omar Muhammad. And it tells the story of Omar and his brother and growing up in a refugee camp in Kenya. And so, like I said, it's a graphic novel. And I think they say it's like a middle grade, but I mean, I read it and I just really, really just appreciated this book being in the world. It was a National Book Award finalist. So yeah, really, really important story. And then the last book I'm going to recommend is called The Anti-Racist Writing Workshop by Felicia Rose Chavez. And this is really for any of your listeners out there who are teaching writing, or maybe you have experiences being in writing workshops. I know many of us may have. I think over the years, KJ, I've had some like concerns about how we often do writing workshops and wondered, are there other ways we could be doing this? So I just love the ideas that this author is bringing in terms of how we could potentially rethink the ways we traditionally have done writing workshops. So those would be the things that I have been reading.
Excellent. I love that. Well, I have been indulging my deep and abiding fascination with Shirley Jackson lately. So I have just finished her Letters, which I've mentioned many times on the podcast, and I'm rereading the Ruth Franklin Shirley Jackson bio. And Ruth was actually on the podcast a few years ago, so I will link to that, but she wrote this amazing biography of Shirley Jackson, and she discovered letters that Shirley Jackson's family wasn't even aware of that she had sent to a fan, like a year's worth of really long, really detailed, really fun to read letters. So it's very fascinating because what I've decided to do is read the letters and the biography and then the book that she was working on at the same time.
Oh, that's
nice. So you get this... She was this very, really insecure person with a very complicated marriage and a husband that was both supportive and also jealous and also kind of awful. And a lot of feelings about her writing, which she, for all of us, you know, managed to express in a variety of places. So you'll get these tidbits that are sort of why she was upset about something or how she was working on it or how she was trying to change it. And it's a fascinating trove for somebody who wants to get into it. So that's where I've been, in the trove, for no reason, I might add, that other than that I find it sort of fills my writerly well. I'm not going to do anything with this. It's all out there.
I mean, who knows, though? Sometimes I think we fill our wells and who knows how it can emerge.
It will emerge somehow. But yeah, it's not like I'm working on an article or something. I'm just enjoying like this sort of deep dive into somebody else's head.
Yeah, so, absolutely. Cool. That's cool. That's neat.
All right. Well, this was fantastic. Everybody enjoy and get a chance to connect with us. So there's something new going on in the world of hashtag am writing, which I have just begun playing with today. But if you are a subscriber to hashtag am writing, which you absolutely should be, whether you're a paid subscriber or not, you get our weekly show notes. You can also download the Substack app, which I am becoming a huge fan of. I was very dubious at the beginning. Why do I need another app? But Substack has just come up with this new thing, chat, basically. So it's like a little mini social media for only listeners in the podcast. And I can't tell you, this is like the answer to my personal social media prayers at this point. I have just, if you are a subscriber, you've already heard all this. You heard it 2 weeks ago. We've probably been chatting for weeks now. But I tanked Twitter the moment that Elon Musk decided that Paul Pelosi had brought his attack on himself. I haven't really been into Twitter for a long time, and I don't like to get political, and this is not really a political thing. It's more just like, can we just be civil? And I mean, really, it was just over the top for me. I was like, okay, that's it. I don't care that there are 20,000 people, maybe. I don't care that I have a blue check. I'm out. I'm done. So I actually deleted it. And I can see that moment coming with Facebook and Instagram. We're going to need somewhere to talk. So I very excitedly started this chat, and I hope you guys will join me there. So throwing that out there. That's it. I'm the only one talking now, so I'll say thanks again.
Oh, thank you so much. This was so fun. I enjoyed the conversation.
And listeners, come chat. Subscribe to the email if you don't already, because it's getting better and better every single time. There's all kinds of stuff in there that you don't always get in the podcast. And, of course, as we say every week, keep your butt in the chair and your head in the game.
The Hashtag AmWriting podcast is produced by Andrew Perella. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output because everyone deserves to be paid for their work.
Do you read Serena Bowen? If you don't, you should! First off, because her books are killer fun. And secondly, because everyone is a masterclass in pacing, characterization, and plot. And if you think plotting romance is easy because we know what's going to happen, then call me again after you've tried it. Her latest is A Little Too Late. Find out more at serenabowen.com.